In my current model, we only step into a new behavior when it feels better in the moment.
In the moment.
Yeah. So how do we set it up so that Rambo, I love that, so that, you know, we can allow Rambo to do his thing in the appropriate context.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach-churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening.
I got some good earth tea.
Earth tea? What does that mean?
Good Earth is the company.
Oh, it's the brand. Okay. It's just dirt earth and
tea.
Water.
Yeah, dark. Yeah. Well, right. I'm in touch with the earth.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders podcast. I am your host, Kyle, and today's guest is possibly our oldest friend of the show. And I mean that in the sense of friendship, Rich. The friendship's longevity, not yours. Assuming that friendship is still intact after this intro, I thought it'd be a lot of fun to invite you back to catch up on kind of what we've been up to for the past year.
Awesome.
So what have you been up to since we last spoke?
Oh, my gosh. Working with traders, doing coaching, and my online courses. You know, I finished the book a couple of years ago, A Private Conversation with Money.
Yep, I got my copy behind me.
Oh, great. And what I've learned is that the issues that traders face are often a lot deeper than just creating an edge with their strategies, executing them, that it's really a transformational process. And I think that trading, if traders are willing to say, okay, trading is one of the most challenging things there is that I can do, and it will touch every part of my old processes, beliefs, traumas, issues, and that I am willing to face those, then we're off to a great start. And I really love my clients that I see personally, because it's just such a joy. It's like there'll be a moment where they'll go, Oh my gosh.
That light bulb moment.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then they can step into a new behavior, a new way of being, a new way of thinking, and a reframe.
See, I think that second part, that last part, is the part that I've been kind of getting stuck at, I think. I think that a lot of the stuff that we've done, a lot of the work that we've done together over the past, 4 years now, I think it's been?
Mm-hmm.
Identifying those characters has been like the thing that I've been like really working on the past year or so. I've actually written up a pretty good document, ran into a couple other people that kind of were preaching some of the same like ideas, NLP, family system values stuff that mm-hmm. you're doing. So we kind of worked a little bit with them and did some of that stuff. And it wasn't until I was working with those guys, I was like, oh shit, this is the same stuff Rich was telling me to do 4 years ago that I had no idea what it meant or what it was called. So I had to get you back here because you're the okay. OG of this stuff. So I don't know where you kind of want to start with that, but maybe we can talk about some of the characters that I've identified.
Yes, let's do that.
So the two main ones then, I think, I've named them John Rambo and Carl Sagan. So Rambo's kind of like my wild card. He can show up anytime, and when he does, he's ready to just burn everything to the ground in a righteous fury. Like, he's the guy that you send to, you know, save the prisoners at the POW camp when there's no other hope. I think he's partly the reason why I love a good underdog story.
Mm-hmm.
I love seeing someone face impossible odds and then overcome them. That's such a satisfying feeling to me. I think that also means that justice is a main driver of, like, values for me.
Justice.
Rambo is one of the ones who I think encompasses that. But he also needs direction. I think where he gets me into trouble is when he has a mission but no like clear defined objectives or paths. Like when he just shows up and takes over, if I cede control to him, then he's just going to do whatever he can to make things happen. He's either going to go out in a hail of glory or he's going to free the world. You can guess what the odds are on those.
Yeah, I can just vision you, Kyle. Rambo takes over. The markets are there. You're looking at them. We're going to...
I'm going to start shooting here. So,
awesome.
So that's one of the main ones. That's one of my main characters. And then the other main character is my Carl Sagan. I call him that because he's my truth seeker. Truth is a huge value of mine. Knowledge and truth above all else is kind of like the idea that Carl Sagan to me embodies, because mm-hmm. that also could be very dangerous too. Somebody who's cares only about results versus like how they get there can be unethical in some certain circumstances. That's why I use Carl Sagan as the example, because I was reminded of a documentary when he threw a stick of dynamite into a pond to show the camera what sort of species of fish were in there. Maybe you could do that in a way without destroying the pond, you know? So that's what I have to worry about, I think, with my Sagan.
Results versus process.
Right, right.
Boy, that is a really great topic. And I think that for traders, there's so much attached to results.
Yes.
In fact, some of my clients have this big dream. They have this vision of the future. And every tick that goes their way, yes, my dream is coming true. Oh, mm-hmm. my God, this is awesome. Every tick against them, oh, my God, I'm a failure. My dream will never come true. So as a result, they're all looking at this result as versus executing a process.
We talked a lot about shifting the focus to the process and mm-hmm. celebrating the process wins. And that's a lot easier said than done. It feels like one of those like two steps forward, one step back kind of situations mm-hmm. where like you'll make some progress on it. And then next thing you know, you've slipped back and regressed a little bit. But the slip ups and the regressions, the more I do it, the less detrimental, the less painful, the less work they undo, I think is mm-hmm. Fair to say. If that makes any sense.
Sure. In my current model, we only step into a new behavior when it feels better in the moment.
In the moment.
Yeah. So how do we set it up so that Rambo, I love that. So that, you know, we can allow Rambo to do his thing in the appropriate context, and we can allow Carl Sagan to do his thing, and in the moment, it feels better. So that is the clue. So for example, I have a client who was impulsive and did revenge trading, because in the moment, it felt better to do the revenge trading, to try to make it up, to cancel stocks, to double up or whatever. It felt better in that moment to just go, boom, to do that.
I know that feeling.
Yeah. So what if we set it up so that he felt that urge and allowed it to come and go? And I said, and how does that feel now? Oh, my God, that feels so much better. Bingo. As soon as we can get to that stage where the behavior feels better in the moment, right there, like if there's a pizza ordered when my grandkids are here. But when I say, okay, I'll take a piece, boy, that feels so much better to have Rich Friesen, the adult, managing my weight, managing my health. Wow, does that feel good to know that that's who I am and that's what I can do? So setting it up to feel better in the moment, I think, is critical for new behaviors.
Yeah, and that's like this whole work, I think, has kind of stemmed from trying to just have a better understanding of all these emotional impulses that you feel throughout the day. The urge to revenge enter, the urge to not wait for a retest. Mm-hmm. My goal as a trader, or at least the one that I kind of wrote out, is to have my emotional urges inform my rational decision-making process. Like, I feel like that's when I'm trading the best. When I look at something, I say, oh, I feel scared. I want to flatten this trade. But I stop and I say, okay, let's look at that through this other context. Let's look at that through Carl Sagan's eyes and see if there's any mm-hmm. truth to that. Mm-hmm. Should you be feeling scared there or not? And then using that to kind of inform my decision-making process. When that happens, it feels so much better as a process.
Exactly. In fact, what you're talking about is having different functions. Right. One of the challenges of our independent traders is that you have to manage at least three different functions all at the same time. For example, when I worked for a large hedge fund, they had the quants, the strategy developers, who had nothing to do with trading. Their job was just strategy development. Then they had the risk manager, who was had the information of the entire organization and all the trades and could manage risk. You know, what if interest rates go up? What if they go down? What if the market goes up and down? What if this? What if that? And that was the risk manager. And then there was me. I was on the floor. And in fact, I'll tell you a short story. When I just got on the floor, started trading for CRT, Chicago Research and Trading, there was a company, if I can remember the name, slips me right now, but they had some really bad news about their accounting and the stock had dropped. The implied volatility for the options had gone up to 80 and 90, just crazy because everybody was trying to get out. And they said, we want to sell some premium. So I went in and I sold 20 or 30 contracts and got back on the phone. Said, oh, okay, I've sold 30. This long pause, my manager said, no, Rich, we want to sell a lot of premium. So I went back and sold 100, came back, says, okay, Gus, I've sold 100. He said, hang on, let me get Joe. Joe was the big top manager of the firm, right? He's the guy that owned it. And Joe came on and he said, Rich, do you want me to give this order to a broker? I went back, sold. I pounded that premium from about 80 down to about 60. Jeez. And we made $500,000 on the trade. So, you know, there's the execution part. What I was confusing was that my job was just one job. They had the risk management. They had the strategy developers, and my job was to execute. So many of my clients get confused because they have the risk manager there, they have the strategy guy there, they have the executor guy there. And so what we work with is saying, okay, you've done your strategy, you've done your research, you've got your risk limited with stops or, you know, the percentage of capital you're doing. Now your job is just one job. One chop only. Mm-hmm. Execute, execute, execute. Now, the problem comes with start to execute. Oh, wait a minute. Is this really right? There's this hesitancy. I can't lose money. The emotions come up. And that's the challenge. Can you just execute? And the way I frame it is, this isn't about you. This is just about the strategy. I mean, let's execute the strategy for 2 weeks. And we'll see the results. And if they don't work, we'll say, well, then we'll go back to the research. And I have my traders get three hats, a green, yellow, red hat, for example.
Yeah. And we made wristbands, I think, the first time we talked to you for that. Yes, for executor, right. Researcher, and risk manager. Yep.
Yes. And that way you know what your function is. Otherwise, as an independent trader, when those get intertwined, man, you just get constipated.
Rich, can we go back real quick to the example that you used? I just wanted to ask a clarifying question there, because you put the misunderstanding on yourself saying that you didn't understand what your function was in that role, but I'd actually venture to say that maybe they should have given you a little bit better direction as far as like what they expected you to sell.
That's true. I was a new trader and I didn't appreciate the size of the capital and how big a bet they wanted to make. But, you know, but it also illustrates what my job and function is.
But I think that might actually kind of tie back in too, where if you haven't clearly defined those roles for yourself, even.
Yeah. You know, if they said, we want to sell 1,000 at the money and, right. You know, near the money options, then I would have had a clear role. But it's a fun story.
They were probably razzing you a little bit, right? Did you have a little bit of a ego when you showed up there?
Well, see, I'm an accidental trader.
Right.
I was a philosophy major, master's degree in clinical psychology. My buddy Joe, I knew from college, hired me. I mean, the world of the finance and all that was just I mean, it wasn't even in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result, I walked into a world that I never would have gravitated to just normally.
Right.
So I was out of my league. And in fact, you know, I have the, when I went trading on my own and building my trading firm, I had the $200,000 limit story. And I think I've told that I had an internal limitation simply because having that much money, having that much profit potential was outside of my identity.
Yeah. Yeah. Was there, did you, you had hangups too with your, like making more than your father, or was that some another trader you're telling us about?
Yeah, that was a story for another trader.
Yeah, yeah.
His father, you know, immigrant, worked three jobs, put him through college, did all this work. And here he made that much money in a day easily. And for him, the voice in his head said, you are disrespecting your father, who he loved and adored. So, you know, all these stories and these voices and clearing them up. And one of the things that I work with clients is that I will trade with them. You know, we'll get on Zoom, share screens. And what's interesting is, maybe with one exception, they never go off the rails.
When you're there.
Yeah, when I'm there.
We just need a picture of you on our screen. That's all we need.
I could sell my image.
Yes. That one, right there. Yep. That's the one. I'm going to try that tomorrow.
Okay. Well, I'll just take a screenshot of me going,
right. God, I love that. Oh, man. So you mentioned the voices popping up. This is actually something I kind of wanted to segue into at some point here. There's voices that I've been noticing that are becoming more pronounced, like the more I'm becoming aware of it or listening for it. And I'm curious if that's circumstance or if they're always there and just awareness. You just had to build awareness to actually hear them at some point.
Yeah, awareness starts. You know, I have the golden keys, and the first is awareness. The second is acceptance of what we learn. And the third is our actions. Now, what do we want to do? Mm-hmm. So we always have the voices. There are some people who can hear them continuously, and they have serious emotional problems because they can't filter. The voices are like screaming at them all the time. On the other hand, you have the engineering type who
I'm going to try really hard to listen for.
Yeah, really hard to listen. But if we can listen to the voices, for example, we've lost some money and we're going to get it back. And there's this voice that says, you got to get this back. We can't lose money. You can say, there's my revenge voice. Hello, revenge voice. I know that it will feel better to you if we just take some action now. But I'm going to take a breath and thank you for the alert. Thank you for the good intention of getting the money back. But we know, revenge voice, how's it worked in the past when we've listened to you?
Right.
Oh, not so good. Okay. So let's feel better now in the moment by allowing that need to come up, allowing the voice to speak, and allowing it to come and go and appreciating it. If, on the other hand, we try to stop those voices, you know, we create an internal struggle. Well, then, of course, when we're struggling against ourselves, it's very difficult to be creative and follow the system.
So it's interesting that you mentioned the acknowledging it, like having the conversation with that. It's something that I think we were exploring with John Sawyer, saying like when you're feeling that fear, like invite it to sit down with you. Like, hey, old friend, fear, like how are you doing today? Strike up a conversation, ask him how he's doing.
Yep.
I feel like I've been doing something a little bit different. Rather than acknowledging it, it's almost been like questioning it. Oh, is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I think this, if I hear that voice, the self-critical voice, as though this thing that you're putting out is stupid. Oh, is it? Is that true? Most of the time, it's not.
Byron Katie has a four-step approach about questioning our beliefs and our voices. She has a form for doing that. Look up Byron Katie on the internet and a four-step approach to questioning those voices. And for some people, that's very effective.
Do you know why that is or why that's the case?
Sure. There's some people who say, hey, I want to be effective. I'm going to question this voice. Well, this voice isn't very helpful. And that can, in fact, change behaviors. For other people, we have to go deeper because that voice is destructive, but it was created at such an early age and so deeply intertwined itself in so many parts of our lives and our beliefs and our behaviors that it requires a little more work than just questioning. But boy, that's a great place to start. And Kyle, that's just wonderful, you know, to question the voice.
Well, you make a great point with understanding where the voice is coming from, though, because if you never understand that, it's never going to stop showing up, yeah. Right? If you yeah. don't understand its motivations, then you're never going to be able to change it either.
Yeah, what you just said is important, understand its motivations. And if you assume that every voice in a context has a positive intent,
mm-hmm.
you know, for example, if you had a father who was angry at you and coming home drunk and didn't know if you were going to get beaten, and so you hid under the bed. So whenever any voice comes up that is slightly angry, the depth of that trauma is so great that you disappear physiologically, emotionally, and are unable to handle somebody who's angry.
So when you see the person get like small, like
yep.
physically
yeah.
getting
you can
small.
Say, is that true? No, it's not true. How do you know it's not true? And you can go through a checklist of that. But if that pain is at a really deep level, then the questioning may not reach down there. But it's certainly a great way to start.
Pain, you mentioned the pain. The pain is an interesting one because sometimes it seems like there's going to be the potential for a lot of pain when you start to engage with some of these voices or start to mm-hmm. really investigate.
Mm-hmm.
But surprisingly, I've not found that to be the case. The fear of pain is there. The fear that it's going to be scary is there when you're addressing it. But most of the time, it usually ends up being a positive experience.
Oh, boy. I'd like to underline what you just said. Highlight it in yellow highlighter and put it in flashing lights.
I'll make a clip out of this one for you.
Yeah, right. Because when we actually listen to that voice, understand its positive intention, sometimes that voice will go, I'm so tired. I've been working so hard. I've been trying to protect you. And I realize it's not helpful. If I could just go to sleep and let go. And then you can say to that voice, yes, I'm safe or whatever the issue is. And I'm willing to let you go. And what you can do for me is if anything comes up that you feel is dangerous, just say, hey, Rich, I'm concerned about this. And we can then use maybe your intuition or something that in a context that you bring up.
But see, that's exactly the relationship that I want to craft with all these voices in my head. I want to have that familiarity with each other where, like, mm-hmm. instead of shouting and screaming in my ear, it is comfortable tapping me on the shoulder and saying, hey, you yeah. might be careful here. This looks a little scary.
Yeah, exactly. And oftentimes we'll have a conversation with these voices, go back and forth mm-hmm. when I'm doing my coaching. And that voice, we invite it to have an upgrade. Would you like to learn to do your job better? You bring something to the marketplace. You bring something to me because you protected me at a time when I didn't have any more options. So here's what the new job is. Would you be willing to take it on? And sometimes the response is, oh my gosh, oh, to let go of, you know, all the stress and worry. And yes, I can do that job. And then we get a conversation going and we get rapport with those voices. So Kyle, is there a voice that particularly you'd like to look at right now?
Let me see if there's one that's around. One thing I have been finding is it's a little harder to get some of these to show up. Pool guy is kind of an interesting one. He's the guy who likes to show up and criticize my work. But that'd be trading. It can also like spill into podcasts and like tweets and mm-hmm. things like that. Even just in everyday interactions with people. Mm-hmm. The other one would be the saboteur. He's the part of me that wants to speed up the process, skip the work, sling contracts. I think his goal is to get me to just either pass or fail quickly so we can go do something else that's less risky.
Pass or fail quickly. Okay.
Yeah. Like, I've been trying to learn how to trade for the last 4 years. And I think he's just kind of ready to say, you know what? You're either going to be successful trading or you're not. Let's find out.
Yeah. Well, there. Okay. So, what is the value of that voice?
It's just, I think it's just keeping me from wasting too much time in his mind, or the way he would see it.
Yeah. I think of Elon Musk. You know, boom. try, fail, learn, move on.
Right.
So, in what context is the saboteur adds value to your life? In what context is pass or fail quickly? When is that helpful to you?
Anytime you got to make a quick decision, and the market is full of times when you need to make quick decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So there's value in having somebody who can make a snap decision by quickly analyzing information and saying, yes, here, now.
Great. So if we went into a coaching session, we would look and appreciate the saboteur, make a decision, pass or fail. We would work on, is a failure a personal issue about you, who you are, and the quality of human you are? Or is it information from the world outside about a particular process? So if the failure is, oh my God, I failed. Oh, the failure means that I'm not going to make it. If we go down that road, then it becomes debilitating. On the other hand, if we say, okay, that's interesting. This strategy didn't work, or that's interesting. I didn't execute it according to my plan. Fascinating. So if the pass or fail is information, and again, I think of Elon Musk, who even if a rocket blows up, he'll say, wow, that was interesting. I wonder what we learned from it. Here's the data. Oh my gosh, we missed this. Okay, we try it again.
Yes. So I look at this like he just needs a better defined job.
Yes. So, you know, again, if we were going into coaching, we would have that conversation, go back and forth, have you sit in two different chairs and define the job and the context. It's important that different voices are really valuable in different contexts.
Mm-hmm.
And so to match the context with the voice and refine the job. And oftentimes, I know this sounds silly talking to another voice in your head, but oftentimes that voice will be relieved to have a better job that's less stressful.
That, I think, is fascinating. I'm surprised I haven't tried that yet. I feel like I probably should have.
Well, here, okay. Do you notice what you just did? Do you know what? Just stop for a minute, Kyle. You notice what you just did?
I just criticized myself for not doing something that I didn't know about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of weird, huh? Or interesting, huh? Not weird.
Yeah,
not
fascinating.
Weird. That's interesting, right? Yeah.
Okay.
Where does that come from?
Yeah, where did that come from? If you were to rephrase that, what would you say?
I'd say that's fascinating, and that's actually a really exciting new avenue to try, and I'm excited to go and, you know, put that to the test.
How does that feel?
It feels a lot better than criticizing myself.
Well, okay, so let's stop here.
Yep.
And I just want to say that in the moment, it feels better.
Yeah.
Well, this is exactly what we're looking for. In that moment, with my coaching clients, they'll go, wow, that feels better. And then we can step into that world. If, on the other hand, this is what I should do, I didn't do it right, that means we're setting up a continual struggle.
Yeah, that's conflict. You're conflicting with your current and past self, even.
Kyle, you just gave the great example, and you redid it, so that I couldn't ask for more. This is wonderful.
Well, good. I'm glad that helped. Man, see, now that's the place that I want to be at, though. I want to be at the place where I have like a good understanding of all of these different players and an understanding of the situations where they thrive, to where I can point and call them out and say, oh, hey, fear, your job now is to keep me from doing anything stupid for the next 20 minutes because news is coming.
Yep.
Saboteur, I want you to make quick snap decisions when we hit to this level and tell me whether I should buy it or not.
Yep.
And then when I can do it like that, then it feels like we're all working together.
Rapport. Oh my gosh.
That's such a good word.
Oh.
Rewarding me with some good breathing. I love that.
couldn't ask for more. So where do you want to be? We got 2025. Good. We have an interesting year coming up politically.
Jeez, right?
We have Kyle, who is an open, honest person, trader. Where would you like to be at the end of 2025?
As far as trading goes or in
yes,
general?
Yes, in your life, trading, it's all kind of tied together, actually.
It is, yeah. For 2025, I've already set some goals for the year as far as trying to grow the podcasting side of the business.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be probably the majority of the focus, but the reason that I wanted to do that was to take some of the pressure off of trading. So I would like to get to a point where money-wise isn't necessarily important. I just want to get to the point where I can what's the word?
Consistent?
Yeah, consistent. I'd like to be able to consistently execute a profitable strategy, regardless of whatever the actual dollar amounts are. I don't care how much it actually makes. I just want to be able to point to something and say, yes, I can execute this consistently and like a professional.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about this before. We have a concept called lucrative and lousy trades.
And I've actually brought all that back into my trading again.
Yeah. So our job is just to feel so good executing lucrative trades. And if we do that, and by the way, for people who don't know, a lucrative trade is one where you are physically, emotionally prepared for the day, you've done your research or whatever, you execute the trade according to your strategy, you exit the trade according to your strategy. If all those things are there, it's lucrative.
Can we go back just a second?
Hmm?
That's the first time I think I've noticed you say, or at least I've heard you say, that the lucrative trades also has to do with your state of mind, your state of being, not necessarily just about following a setup. That's interesting.
Yeah. So once you do that and the trade is lucrative, you can say, I've done my job. Even if it gets stopped out, I've executed. Wow. I mean, can you imagine the power, the good feeling to be able to just execute lucrative trades?
Mm-hmm.
Holy mackerel, that's incredibly satisfying. Now, if you consistently execute them and your risk to reward or your profitability is low, you can say, just like Musk says, when a rocket blows up, my strategy, I've executed consistently and it's not working. Now, we have a whole spreadsheet to manage those numbers and to figure out and to know where it comes from. Because a lot of traders, they don't distinguish between their lucrative and their lousy trades. And so as a result, they don't know if their strategy is effective or not.
And I've actually gone as far as tagging the emotional trades as well, too. So that way I can at least see the drain that those are having on my account.
Yeah, yeah.
'Cause one thing that will stop a behavior is becoming acutely aware of how damaging it actually is to you.
Boy, I've got a spreadsheet of a trader who's has lucrative trades. It means according to the strategy, we're up like 12 or 14,000, and his lousy trades were like down 15,000.
Right. All you gotta do is get rid of.
Oh, oops.
Right. But a lot of it has to do with in that moment, and I think you talked a lot about making yourself or having the conversation to feel better about the moment, I think is kind of what you said.
Yep.
I've been trying to take myself out of the moment, if that makes sense. My stop gets hit and I'm afraid of having my stops be hit. Then say out loud, oh, they got my stop. They got me this time. But hey, I managed
risk. They got me this time.
Something to put some levity into the moment, to take myself out of the doom and gloom thought and like just kind of see it from a higher level. I find when I do that it helps me feel less impulsive and wanting to react in the moment.
Oh, yeah. What you're bringing up is another really important concept, and that's agency.
Agency.
So,
okay.
So, for example, my wife will look at me when I've done something. She'll say, Rich! And there's an immediate, in the amygdala in the back, there's a downshift.
Right.
millisecond reaction, right?
Right, right.
But on the other hand, I can see it and I say, oh my goodness, it looks like I irritated you. Yes, the da 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 da. Okay. So that's agency. And it starts with awareness. So if I am aware in real time when I'm dropping down to a reactive mode, and there's a illustration I tell often. It's a movie called World War Z with Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if I remember it right, but it's a great example. You know, he's running with his family up these steps and trying to get away from the zombies. And if they scratch him or bite him, you know, he's going to turn into a zombie and kill his family. So what he does is he gets to the top. He stands on the ledge at the top of this very high building and leans forward as far as he can without falling. And his hope is that he has enough agency that if he feels like he's turning into a zombie, before he does, that he can just lean forward. So that is agency. Can in that moment when we have go into revenge trading or they got me, the son of a bitches, I'm going to get him back, can we tell, we say, oh, I'm dropping down into a reactive mode. Mm-hmm. And if we can do that, we can go from awareness with practice, with a lot of awareness, and that awareness eventually has enough ability to be proactive and have agency. And if we can continually work from that higher level that you brought up of agency, then that goes a long way.
Rich, I love that, because I've actually felt that. I've experienced that in this past couple of years since meeting, you know, you and some of the other psychologists that we've talked to. And it's not even in trading that I've noticed it manifesting. I've actually noticed it in, like, the example you used and speaking with my wife. Like, I'll feel reactions and then be like, oh, wow, that trigger reaction. Where did that come from?
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, maybe 2 years ago, that might have led to some contentious arguments or maybe a snide comment.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll just say, you know, I just noticed a huge emotional reaction. Wow. That really triggered a lot. Can we talk about that?
Yeah. And we'll have conversations about the things.
Yeah, what a difference that makes.
Like, my wife's sigh is a big one. That she does this. It's just a noise that she makes. It has no meaning to anything, but I've associated it to meaning that she's annoyed with me.
Yes.
And we had conversation about that. Yeah,
I know that one.
I found out it's not me because I was able to actually talk to her about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's something I could have done 2 years ago.
Yeah, wonderful. Well done.
So I guess the point is that maybe we do all this stuff to try to improve our trading, but man, there's so many benefits outside of it that...
Oh, yeah. I've had so many clients tell me, you know, I've decided after our work together not to trade, but boy, has our work together changed my life in other ways. Yep.
Yeah. I love that. And I'm not surprised. Rich, would you have any interest in doing coming on one of our humanity episodes?
Sure.
It's a mini series I started with Cleo. She does a lot of family system values types works and that kind of stuff. She's really interested in NLP and those types of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a series where we talk with traders about how trading has improved their life. So I think that might be something you'd actually be really good at.
Oh, we could have so much fun.
Right? I think Cleo would love you too. All right. Let's see. Well, I think we covered most of the things that I wanted to get to. Is there anything else that we've talked about that you feel deserves maybe a little bit more attention when we got an extra 5 minutes or so?
Yeah, the joy of knowing what your role is, the joy of being able to listen to and upgrade the voices in your head, and the power, and this is interesting, the power you have as a trader once you get consistent, that you can just increase your size as your capital increases. What's interesting is that power is also terrifying to a lot of people on the deepest level. And so they will sabotage themselves so they don't have to face being that powerful.
Do you think it stems from the power that comes from that, or do you think a lot of it has to do with just a bad relationship with money and being afraid of turning into the thing that you despise?
That's a good start right there. And there's just so many things that come up from our background, our self-worth, the things that would change what we like to do. In fact, sometimes trading at break even becomes such a process and such a comfort level that it becomes self-sustaining.
Yeah, I feel like I've been kind of stuck at break even for a while now, actually. That's okay, like the next level, I think. And I feel it coming. feel it coming.
Excellent. Okay.
I messaged Banks at the beginning of the year, one of my other traders that I work with, and it's like, dude, I feel on the verge of a level up. It's coming.
Excellent.
But yeah, so back to the money issues that we were just talking about. You mentioned the book, Private Conversations with Money. Was there any, mm-hmm. were you ever planning on doing a follow-up to that? I thought we mentioned that you were planning on writing another book.
Yeah, there's what my concern is the political divide in our country and the animus that I experienced. It was at a dinner party.
Oh, God, right.
And they were all on one side of the political spectrum. And, oh, my gosh, I just totally detached from reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been working on a book, Healing the Political Divide, but I haven't found, like in trading, I have found very concrete ways and models
mm-hmm.
to move traders forward. But this has got me stymied. I've tested it with both the left and the right in the different groups, but not found something where there's the process of going, oh, that feels better. I haven't got to that point yet, so still working on it.
Oof, yeah, that's a tough one. You really do choose some tough topics to tackle, don't you?
Yes.
If you fix that one, I mean, I think you'd be up for a Nobel Prize, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. I often wonder is if I don't pick things really difficult so that I don't have to worry about actually getting anything done.
Oh, tricky. Kind of gives yourself an excuse for not being able to actually solve the problem kind of thing.
Yes, exactly.
That's funny. It reminds me of my favorite Calvin and Hobbes comic that I remember as a kid. Hobbes like says something. He's like, wow, your mom got really happy and all you did was clean your room. He's like, yeah, the lower I set the bar, the easier it is to exceed it. All right, well, unless you got anything else, I think we probably hit a good place to put a pin in this episode.
Well, it's always been fun. Happy to come back anytime and to explore or go deeper into maybe some very specific topics. So love to do that. And may I give you an appreciation?
Of course, Rich. Anytime.
Your conversation is just so easy with you. It just flows. And it just feels like there's such rapport. And I so appreciate you for your ability to manage that and make that happen. So thank you, Kyle.
Rich, I want to give you an appreciation for being friends with us for as long as that it's been. It's been 4 years now. You were one of the first guests that we ever had, and you've just given us so much time to me personally, our community, and the amount of help that you've given our traders has just been amazing, and I hope that we get to do this for another 4 years or longer.
Well, I hope so. At my age, 4 years. Well, let's make it happen. 4 years. Okay,
4 years. We'll do it. Yes. All right. Well, please join me in thanking Rich for stepping in today. You can do that by either going to mindmusclesfortraders.com or you can visit our deals and discounts page. Take advantage of some of the savings through our affiliate links for Rich. I've also got links to his book there that we'll make sure is in the show notes so it's as easy as possible for you to get to them. I'll be back soon with another exciting guest full of new ideas to improve our tradings. But until that day, like, share, subscribe, all the things, and have a green week. This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.